Hello, it's Andrew May, and welcome to the Performance Intelligence Podcast, Bite-Sized Edition. This is where we take a clip from a previous podcast and amplify it for you in a snack-sized format. Optimize performance through adapting your physical, psychological, and emotional state. In this bite size from episode number 62, Dr. Ben Hamer explains what a futurist is. I agitated and teased him to say, is it a real job? And Ben spoke about how you actually go about becoming a futurist. He dispels the myth that futurists are just making up their titles and jobs by explaining there is a very scientific, robust approach taken when looking into the future and what it could hold. Dr. Ben also talks about some of the ways that he is able to predict advances in tech and society through the use of data and looking at trends, as well as looking at what has happened in the past. And we go into a number of amazing examples using the cartoon The Jetsons to show what some of the early futurists, let's call them Hanna-Barbera, predicted might happen in years to come. What is a futurist? Like, did a bunch of you guys just get together, you, Dom Price from Atlassian, a couple of US guys, and just go, hey, let's create a new title?
I mean, it's not far off it. So, I mean, talking about parents, my parents still don't know what I do. And when I say futurist, my dad says it's a professional bullshit artist. So read into that as you will. But like Dom Price will say that he, when he started at Atlassian, got the opportunity to give himself any job title. So he came up with Work Futurist. I think, though, that it's a growing appreciation that so much is changing around the world. Like I often say that we're experiencing change at the fastest rate in human history, but also the slowest we'll experience for the rest of our lives. And you can't, as an individual, consume so much content to really feel like you've got a good grasp on what that looks like. And so the realm of futurists is to really get an understanding around what are the signals of change that we're experiencing today? What are the kind of trends that are coming about? And not just looking 1-2 years into the future, because we think really short term, because there's so much coming at us. It's thinking 5, 10, 15 years into the future. And then I do a lot of work with organizations to then say, well, what does that mean for example, an energy company? What kinds of energy should you be investing in 10 years time, but you have to start building the infrastructure for today? So there's, you know, you can get certified in it, which I've done. You can join a professional association.
How do you get certified? Do you send away to the futuristinc.com, or is there a course or program? I'm showing my lack of awareness about these new careers coming. Am I sounding like your parents? Because it's funny when you say that, I had a chuckle. My mum still thinks that I do fitness for sporting teams. You know, I work in mental skills now, and recently she said, so what do you actually do with sporting teams now? So hilarious, our parents have no idea. But yeah, what's the accreditation to be a futurist?
Yeah, so I started out doing a marketing degree. So my parents think I work in marketing. I did 1 year working in marketing, but that's besides the point. So you can study to be a futurist in terms of different courses that are increasingly coming into university, but through individual providers, particularly coming out of the US. So there's an Institute for the Future, that's the main one there. Then you've got a central body, which you have to, similar to like a CPA for an accountant, you have to essentially do an exam, pass it, meet certain criteria, and then you get certified. And then once you've hit all of those obstacles, they'll admit you into this professional association.
I'm provoking you and being a little bit playful, which is the way you like presenting, so I'm flipping it back on you. So there is a chartered process now around becoming a futurist. That was for any of the skeptics who are going, mate, he's just got one of his ex-KPMG buddies on and they're making this shit up. Well, we make a bit of it up.
Well, yeah.
Are you planning an upcoming conference or company offsite? For the past 15 years, I've averaged speaking at over 50 events each year, and I still love presenting at conferences as much as I did when I first started. To explore the different presentations I offer on a range of topics and themes, including physical and psychological well-being, becoming burnout-proof, connection and belonging, that's a new area I'm really enjoying presenting on, neuroscience and behavior change, mental skills and leadership and culture. Or if you'd like to understand our fully integrated conference experience with pre-event diagnostics, activities throughout the agenda, including a morning wake-up, energy breaks, team building activities, and digital resources to embed learning. To find out more information and to download a brochure, go to andrewmay.com/keynotes. In futurist.com, I read an article with Nicholas Badminton, what a great surname, titled What is a Futurist? Nicholas says, simply put, a futurist, also known as a futurologist, futurist speaker, foresight practitioner, I think he's made some of those up, Benny, is a person that has unbounded curiosity about what our futures may hold. They practice foresight, right, organize events and engage with people to challenge their poverty of imagination. How good is that? Challenging our poverty of imagination. Futurists ignite new thinking without restrictions of the industrial complex that we find ourselves ensnared by. What do you think of Nicholas's definition of a futurist?
He's probably a futurist and got away with words as well. That's much better than how I put it. Poverty of imagination, that's a bit harsh.
Yeah. Well, that's a really good segue into an article. I loved researching this for you, and I went back to my childhood. We'll put the overlay music on this. You're probably too young to remember, but I grew up watching a cartoon, and it was in colour, before you ask. It was called The Jetsons. Do you know The Jetsons?
Yeah, so The Jetsons was released in 1962, so that's potentially showing your age.
Well, I was watching The Jetsons well after that.
Reruns.
Like 62, mate. That was 13, 14 years before I was born. The theme track, though, meet George Jetson, his wife, Judy. Anyway, in this article, which was on Screen Rant, 14 times the Jetsons predicted the future. So if anyone ever says to you, futurists are all made up, just go to the Jetsons. Here are some of the predictions. In 1962, the article says, viewers were first introduced to an animated TV sitcom. You've done your homework. About a shiny future world of flying cars, sky-high cities and spaceships. It was called The Jetsons. Loving couple George and Jane, their kids Judy and Elroy, their dog Astro and the housekeeper Rosie the Robot. Here are some of the predictions they had. Electronic house cleaners called Roombas.
Yeah,
we've got one of those at home. Actually, the dog ate it. It's being fixed.
Oh, best Christmas present I've ever gotten, by the way.
Aren't they great?
Love it.
Flat screen TVs, pollution, video chats, smart watches, kids would control technology, drones. They were dropping the kids off. There's an episode showing the two kids, Judy and Elroy, getting dropped off by this electric flying robot. Digital newspapers and space tourism. My God, Elon Musk must have watched Jetsons and got his ideas.
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of the stuff that futurists talk about actually comes from things like the Jetsons or sci-fi, and sci-fi kind of is a little bit dramatic, but little bite-sized chunks and bits and pieces. And, you know, I think that the most fascinating thing for me from all of this is when we think of the Jetsons, we think flying cars, and we think that that's out of the realm of our lifetime. But in 2020 in New Hampshire in the United States, they introduced something called the Jetsons Law. And so you can actually go and register a flying vehicle and get license plates on it right now in New Hampshire. And then in Australia by 2032.
So the government has a law now called the Jetsons Law.
Yeah.
Do you think Hanna and Barbera back in 1962 had any idea? Seriously, that's profound that a cartoon created by a creative bunch of blokes and their team has now got a law in a state in America. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And to think though as well that you could actually right now register a flying vehicle. So it makes it a lot more real. I think it's not necessarily that futuristic thing that might be in our children's lifetime. It's in our lifetime. And yeah, closer to home in Australia. So 2032 Brisbane Olympics is coming, and Brisbane City Council has said that they will introduce and make sure they have autonomous flying taxis ferrying people around. So not only flying cars, but driverless flying cars taking people around the Olympics.
Well, Wizard, did you watch the Jetsons, or was it your parents watching the Jetsons?
We had the movie on VHS, which I watched a couple of times.
You had the movie on VHS? Yeah.
See, I had reruns when I was growing. I watched it all the time.
Yeah. Well, that's all we had, mate. I'm thinking Bewitched with Samantha.
I had a bit more choice.
But it's fascinating, right? I wonder, how did those writers come up with the ideas? So when I was provoking, saying, what's a futurist? Well, Hannah and Barbera were futurists, and they just did it through a cartoon that captivated the world.
Yeah, and so you start by thinking about what you'd call a signal of change. So what's something that we're seeing today, and start to play out different scenarios of what that could look like in the future. So back then, it went from using, you know, people who would send post via mail, and then you could actually instantaneously contact someone via a telephone where you'd hear their voice. And so you go, all right, well, what would happen if you heard their voice, but you could also see their face? And that's when you see things like video calls on the Jetsons. What happens if it's not just necessarily on a screen, but a screen that's on your wrist? And that's when you then start to play these sorts of scenarios out. Likely, you know, likewise, they got a lot of stuff, I wouldn't say wrong, they weren't predicting, but stuff that never eventuated. But within that, you get some gems.
Pet treadmills. is one of the things they predicted. I don't think we've got pet, and I hope we don't have pet treadmills, because I've spent decades telling men and women around the world, if you don't like exercise, buy a dog. I reckon I've done more for dog, or COVID did more for dog sales than that, but I reckon I've got hundreds of people to buy dogs because you've got to get out and walk them. So getting a dog treadmill just gives me shivers. And 3D created food, so 3D printed food. Can you get that?
Yeah. So they're actually using 3D printed food now and will more and more in the fight against hunger and homelessness. So you can print a whole heap of different foods. We're going to see in the market in Australia in the end of 2024, so next year, we're going to see artificial meat hitting our market. So that's meat that's grown in labs that tastes and looks and feels like real meat, and that will be 3D printed.
Yeah, wow. Now, if you're futurist as a gang, and I'm sure you've got your handshakes and your digital swag.
It's very Al Capone, yeah.
How come none of you predicted COVID?
I mean, some people did. I think Bill Gates said that he did, and there was that. Did you ever see that thing on Netflix, Pandemic or whatever it was called? Was it Pandemic?
There was a movie a number of years ago where they had these monkeys escaped, and I can't remember the name of the movie. Wiz, do you remember the movie?
Oh, yeah, Days Later.
Yes. Gosh, you're good on movies. You've done a lot of research. So 28 Days Later.
Yeah, but there's been all these movies and there's been, you know, people who have predicted it. And I think it just came a lot sooner than people thought. Like, people were thinking 2030 would be the next one because, again, it's not like it's the first pandemic that we've had, and there will always be cycles of this coming about. But what they're now working on is a super vaccine. So a vaccine that essentially will be able to be rapidly tailored to address any virus that comes at us in the future. So rather than waiting months or years for a cure to a particular pandemic, you can kind of nip it in the bud early on. So the way that we experience pandemics in the future will be very different. But, I mean, yeah, some people predicted it. I was too busy thinking about the good stuff than the bad stuff. So
it's because the difference I see with you and the work you do, you're an optimistic futurist. You're not, we're going to go to hell in a handbasket. The world's going to be polluted. We got wars everywhere. I like your message, which is more about how it's going to change for the positive. Keep that as an open loop. I just want to talk about an article in Wired.com, and I just wanted to say Wired.com so you can think I'm a lot cooler than I actually am. And the article was titled, Can Society Learn from the Mistakes of Futurism? Stephen Novella, who I'm sure you know, co-host of the popular podcast, The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, great podcast he does with his brothers Jay and Bob. And in this article, Stephen writes on futurism. When you look at past futurists, the big mistakes they make are not predicting the game changers. Anyone can predict incremental advances, but the things that really trip futurists up are when they think something is going to be a breakthrough and it isn't, or they just entirely miss the real breakthroughs. The big one I can think of is the analog to digital transition. Nobody picked up on that.
Mic drop. I think, though, the thing with futurists is that futurists aren't crystal ball gazers. They're not necessarily making predictions. A lot of what I do is sparking a conversation. I'm not always going to be right, but I'm going to be evidence-based. And I want people to have a conversation about what a potential future could look like, but also and equally what we want to avoid. So, you know, the recent intergenerational report that got released, and it had a whole heap of negative stuff in it, and understandably so, because that's what the data is telling us if we don't change course. But that's what those kind of reports that look 40 years out do. They give us an opportunity to say, this is a future we don't want. So how do we work backwards to avoid it? So it's not always about making predictions. It's about presenting a story and bringing some colour to a potential future state, whether that's going to come to fruition or not, and how do we either work towards it or how do we work against it.
Hi again, it's Andrew, and I hope you really enjoyed that episode. We would appreciate if you helped to amplify the Performance Intelligence podcast by sharing episodes with your friends and with your colleagues, by going to iTunes and leaving a rating and review. This really does help get the message out to a wider audience, and I love reading the comments as well. If you'd like to know more about booking me as a speaker at your next annual conference or company offsite, or purchasing one of the books I've written, including MatchFit, or if you'd just like to receive my monthly e-newsletter, which is called the AM Edition, that has stacks of information specific to all things human performance, go to andrewmay.com, and we'll see you on the next edition of Performance Intelligence.